Good evening. It's time for us to begin in here as people make their way to their classes. Again, we've been going through this study, making things right when things go wrong, and these are the areas that we've covered. Last Wednesday, we talked about letting go of our past and how that can affect our future, and that we need to doing our best to let that thing go and not be what defines us anymore. So tonight we're going to be looking at, again, another kind of something to be adding to our tool belt, something to be considering when we think about things that have gone wrong. Some of the things that have gone wrong are out of our control. Some of them are in our control, and we have ability to deal with them. One of those things is dealing with resentment. I know nobody in here has ever dealt with that, but there are other people that deal with resentment. Obviously, it's something that at any point in our lives, we've all dealt with this in some form or fashion. But let me ask you a question. Where does resentment come from when you think about resentment? Where does that come from? What's that?
Jealousy.
Can breed resentment. What else? A hurt. Hurt can breed resentment. How many of you have been wronged before? Can being wronged or taken advantage of in some way. There's all kind of different ways that resentment springs up. It's from the Latin word resento, which looks Spanish, but it's not. It means to refeel. It means to refeel a thing. Does that make sense when you think about resentment? You think about that wrong that you had that was done against you, and those emotions come back up again, and you refeel it. It's like just nastiness leftovers kind of thing, and we'll get to some of that tonight. Streams from hurt or wrong that we suffered, and if left unchecked, it is emotionally devastating. And you maybe have seen that in people's lives, how resentment can be devastating, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But what do we need to do in order to check our resentment? Can we take the initiative in dealing with resentment? This is something that's ours. Nobody else is going to be able to help us. Well, maybe help us, but nobody else is going to be able to take this from us. So when we look at resentment, this is something that needs to start with us. And Jesus took initiative in forgiveness, which is the root way we need to deal with resentment. But when Jesus was on the tree to be crucified, what was it that he said about forgiveness in Luke chapter 23-34? Father, what? Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Before anyone asked, he made that statement. In Romans chapter 5, you look over there, Romans chapter 5, verses 6 through 8. For while we were still helpless, at the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. For one will hardly die for a righteous man, though perhaps for even a good man someone would dare even to die. But God demonstrates his own love toward us, in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Did Christ wait for us to ask for forgiveness to die for us? This is something that can halt our progress. Have you heard this before? I can't unless they ask for forgiveness first. I can't forgive them unless they've asked for it first. Now, on face value, it makes sense, right? At face value, I need to make sure that they ask for forgiveness before I give that. But what does that do to us? What does that make us? I can't forgive somebody unless they ask for it. Now you have to keep a list, right? Yes, you're getting ahead of us there. Super student. But yes, it is giving them a power. So I have to have a list of everybody who's wronged me. Have you ever met anybody that has a list? I'm adding you to my list, right? Everybody's wrong, and then I check them off when they've asked for forgiveness. Does that seem to be how it works? Not from what we read. It is, in its basest form, it's rationalized hate, anger towards an individual. I'm rationalizing, well, they haven't asked for forgiveness yet, so I can hold on to this. I can hold on to it. I get to keep this until they ask for forgiveness. And we'll talk about what that is and how that's going to be very, very damaging, because all it does is serve up more trouble, right? I'm holding on to this. And I'm going to keep this anger. I'm going to keep this resentment until they ask for it. And we think this is some sort of control, right? This is, I'm in control of the situation. I'm in control of what's going on. But we are actually ones being controlled by our own resentment, our own emotions. This is not a healthy way of dealing with resentment, of waiting for them to forgive. That's not how Christ forgave. And we'll talk more about that in just a minute. But we need to make sure that that's not part of our idea or concept of forgiveness. And that does not excuse them the need to ask for forgiveness, and we'll talk about that. But we need to be able to be in a place where we can forgive. Otherwise, we're holding on to that. And we'll talk about how damaging that can be. But when we look at taking the initiative, there's several passages that really step out or stand out in relationship to this particular subject. In 1 Peter, it says, "You've been called for this purpose, since also Christ suffered for you, doing what?" When he suffered on the cross, what did he do for us, according to this passage? He left us an example. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where somebody has done something wrong to you and it hurts and you don't want to forgive them, and then you read a passage like this, forgive them and Christ is that ultimate example, and you're like, ugh. But it's so hard to do that, and we'll talk about this, but he says, here's an example for you to follow in his steps, who committed no sin when sin was committed against him. When all these things were done to him, he did not revile in return while suffering. He uttered no threats, but kept entrusting himself to the one who judges righteously. What does that mean, to entrust yourself to the one who judges righteously? He let God handle it. What's that? Giving it to God. And this kind of goes in with what we'll look at in connection with vengeance. But if I'm entrusting everything I have, my whole being into God, to God and what's going on, and he did that. Nevertheless, not my will, but your will be done, and in all aspects. This is what it looks like. He had to suffer those things. He, in this case, particularly for bearing our sins, for what we have done. So by his wounds, we were healed. By his wounds, we were healed. He had to go through that. We needed him to go through that. And we'll talk about that too towards the end if we have time. But by his wounds, we were healed. Also in 1 Peter later on, to sum things up, which he wasn't even close to the end of his letter, but he said this, to sum things up, all of you be harmonious, sympathetic, burly, kind-hearted, humble in spirit, not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, which is difficult, right? But giving a blessing instead. What does that even look like? Have you tried that or thought about that? Somebody insults me, and in that moment, I'm going to give them a blessing. I'm going to say something kind about them, right? That would be weird. We don't do that. Nobody does that. But we should, right? For we were called for this very purpose, that you might inherit a blessing. Again, this concept that we were called to do something higher. Resentment happens. Resentment happens. As much as anger, as much as love, as much as anything else, resentment happens. But it's what we do with that. We've been called to respond to resentment in a different way. And so, if you, the one who desires to love and see good days, must keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit, must turn away from evil and do good, must seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are towards the righteous, and his ears attend to their prayer, but the face of the Lord against those who do evil. So, again, there's this three imperatives when it's coming the concept of forgiving people that are around us, for being able to have this kind of heart. I must be able to do this. It is not something that you can just say, oh, well, somebody can do it, but you know, I'm justified in hanging on to my resentment in this particular case. There's no case where we can be justified in holding on to resentment, as hard as it is. In Colossians chapter 3, in a similar fashion, so as those who have been chosen by God, who is that? Who are those who are chosen by God, holy and beloved? That's us, right? That's Christians, those who have put on Christ. All right, so if I'm doing that, then I need to put on a heart of compassion. Again, this list of character traits, of attributes that need to be part of who we are. And these are things that we're always working on. We're always struggling to be more complete, to working towards having these in our lives. Kindness, humility, gentleness, patience, bearing with one another, forgiving each other. Whoever has a complaint against anyone, just, here it is again, that example. Just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you. The bar is set so high that we never get to a place where, I don't have to. This is a bar higher than what Christ has done for us. That sin that somebody committed against you, think about it this way. That sin that somebody committed against you, Christ already died to forgive them for it. Christ already died to forgive them for it. Do you want to hold on to that? We need to put things in a bigger perspective. And I recognize, guys, we're dealing with book application here. We're dealing with big things. But when it comes down to the actual event, when it comes down to the emotion of whatever it is, and we can think of some pretty horrible examples of things that have happened to people in their lives, and they've held on to resentment. But even in those circumstances, we need to be able to be the ones that would forgive. Romans chapter 12. I kind of liked this one as a kid. When parents talk to you about forgiving, but you still want them to hurt a little bit. Did you ever have that? Like when you're a kid? When you're a kid, right? I did. I grew up with, brothers. You hit people back when they hit you, right? You're supposed to do that. But not according to this passage. Never pay back evil for evil to anyone. But are you sure? Just like once, one time. Can I get like a card? There's got to be an indulgence somewhere, right? One time. Never pay back evil for anyone. Respect what is right in the sight of all men, if possible, so far as it depends on you. What does this mean? As much as it depends on you, what does that look like in real life? What does that look like? I'm taking responsibility, right? I'm doing my part. Somebody's wronged me. Somebody's done something against me. As much as I can do, I'm going to make amends. And that's fair, isn't it? Because I don't have control over the other person. I have no way of making them do what they should do. But I do have control over me. So as much as depends on me, I'm going to go that far. I'm going to go that far. Yes, we can Elsa that, right? Just let it go. Sing the song. But that's, and we look at these things. Somebody might say, well, that's too simplistic. That might be too simplistic. But in one way, it's not. It is a thing that we can let go. But we'll talk more about that. So I don't need to take out my own. As much as possible, live at peace with all men. Never take your own vengeance, beloved, but leave room for the wrath of God. Here's that entrusting ourselves again. This is another part of entrusting. I leave room for God in what needs to happen. Again, we go back to He's a righteous judge. Whenever we want to take vengeance, how many hundreds of movies are based on the concept of vengeance? There's like Marvel and DC comic characters based on that simple carnal concept of vengeance. Do they ever cross the line and go too far in those movies, in those shows, comics? Maybe in your own life, you crossed the line and went too far in exacting the vengeance that you thought would make up for. Because the scale is never really balanced in that, is it? When we think about vengeance, the scale, it's never really like, well, he did a little bit more, now I need to do some more. You hit me too hard, I got to hit you a little harder. It's like it's never equal. But when I leave it in the hands of a just God, if I leave it in the hands of a righteous judge, it'll be equal. It'll be equitable. It'll be what needs to be. And doesn't need to be on my hands. It doesn't need to be at my hands that this happens. But leave room for God. Vengeance is mine. I will repay, says the Lord. But if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you will heap, and this is the part I liked as a kid, because at least maybe this works, right? In so doing this, you're heaping burning coals on their head. So if you're not doing it because you love them, at least do it because you're imagining coals on their head or something. I don't know, right? But this is what I need to do. This is what I need to do, these things. Because that conscience, if it's there, needs to be burned on that individual. And here's where it comes down to it. When I let resentment take control of me, I have let evil overcome me. Do not be overcome by evil. Resentment is one of those forms where I can be completely consumed in that event, that person, that thing, whatever happened, and I'm overcome. There's a way out of it, but it's not an easy path. And these are not easy concepts we're dealing with. These are not easy concepts. But you know what? Christians are tough people. Do you ever think about that? We do the hard things that nobody else is willing to do. Most people respond with visceral, animalistic, basic responses in a lot of ways. We're called to think about things on a different plane, on a higher plane. Think of the long game. Think of that person's soul in relationship to things, not just what we need for retribution. And so we're called to think about things in a different way. Resentment is a destroyer. This is out of the Alcoholics Anonymous, page 64, if you wanted to know. But resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all the forms of spiritual disease. For we have not been only mentally or physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. Resentment has driven many to addictions. Resentment, the hurt, has driven many to various addictions in order to cope with the pain and the hurt that's there. And so what that looks like physically is I'm holding on to the thing that is destroying me, and I'm grabbing something else that destroys me to take care of this one thing that destroys me that I just need to let go. That's what it looks like. If I would let go of the thing that's hurt, if I would find out what the root hurt is and let that go, I would not need anything else to cope. I would not need any secondary thing or whatever that is. And in this case, any kind of addiction, a lot of times it says that's resentment is the number one that drives people to find some sort of form to deal or cope with that. So as resentment as a destroyer, don't wait for somebody to come up and say, you know what, I've forgiven you. That magic day that happens in the Hallmark movies, do not expect that to happen, right? That magic moment when they're going to come up to you, you've been waiting for this for so long, and they finally say, I'm sorry, and they ask for forgiveness, and then you can forgive them, and then don't wait on them as much as lies in you. Do those things. Because who is resentment hurting most? Is it hurting them? Are they feeling it? They might not even know, right? The odds are they might not even know what's going on. And you're burning and hurting yourself. We have to learn to jettison, to dump that resentment and get it out of our lives, or it's going to destroy us and bring us again down that path to ruin. So how do we overcome? What are some steps? What are some things I can do in control? Well, first, be vulnerable. We don't like being vulnerable. Nobody likes being vulnerable. But this is allowing yourself to feel that what is the underlying emotion? What are the things that have brought me here? Is it hurt? Is it fear? Do we use anger and resentment to cover up other issues that are in place? I will tell you this, that there are things that, like, I respond sometimes when I'm afraid. My first response is to get angry. Does that happen to you at all? Something happens to my children, and they almost get hurt. And I go, how could you do that? And I'm angry at them. Am I really angry, or am I scared, and anger covers up that fear?
We need to make sure that we're able to look at those things, be vulnerable, deal with those things. Otherwise, we're not dealing with it at all. Be aware of what resentment looks like and how is it manifesting. Well, it's not. I've got resentment under wraps. Nobody knows that I get angry. Nobody knows about resentment. Those closest to you might know. You're not covering it up as much as you think you are. How does it manifest itself? What does it look like? Am I more vulnerable or not? Am I more likely to get angry quicker than others and in situations that maybe not warrant that? Am I dealing with those kind of things? And so what does it look like? And then identify maybe how I might play a part in the circumstances. Now, I recognize that there may be some circumstances that I have resentment and I had no part in them, an accident, something happened to me that I have no part in. But there are sometimes circumstances where I have a part in whatever that event took place that I have resentment for. Somebody got on to me for something and it wasn't me that even did it. And I'm angry at them because it got onto me, and it wasn't me. Did I say anything? Did I step up and say, hang on, that wasn't me that did that, and or did I just sit there and take it? So we need to make sure that we're communicating and that we're seeing what can I do. Now, identifying how that manifests or identifying can help us with the next thing. But before we move on from this one, in dealing with this and recognizing my part in this, it also puts things in perspective. Because what happens sometimes with resentment is it gets to the point where we were, you know, completely innocent in whatever took place, and they were the demons that came across and just did this hurtful thing to me. And it may be in certain circumstances that is the case, that you were bebopping along, minding your own business, and this happened. That might happen. But in some circumstances, I might have had a part in whatever took place. I might have had a part to play in that altercation. And so I might need to own up on that. So that puts things in perspective. Because we do have a tendency to those who are involved in that resentment, we tend to demonize. We make them this huge demon, and we are the knights that will slay the demon, right? And we make it out to be maybe more than it needs to be. Or we skew the perspective on things. We need to practice expressing resentment differently. I know how it manifests, but I need to channel that energy into a different, more positive way. Give it a healthy outlet. I mean, we've seen the images or seen, you know, people come home and they're angry about things and they kick the dog. Stop kicking the dog. Right? Metaphorically speaking, stop kicking the dog. Have it manifest in a different way, in a healthy way, in a healthy outlet. If you need to go out in your garage and hammer on metal, that's going to be your outlet. Whatever it is, it needs to be your outlet. Handle it in a different way, a more positive, constructive way. Treat people that we have resentment toward with compassion and kindness. Did we read that somewhere? And this is when we start doing our part towards that individual. And this gets really, really difficult. This gets difficult. We read this in Romans, and maybe we need to think about, I'm doing this because it hurts, and I'm heaping those coals. But eventually we'll find that we're starting to let go of some things. And doing this is a process of letting go, is I'm able to be around. And maybe my first step is not walking up to this person and shaking their hand or giving them a big hug like nothing ever happened. Maybe my first step is being in the same room with that person. That's step one. I can be in the same room with them. And they didn't hurt me, and I didn't hurt them, and I'm fine. I'm in the same room with them. That's step one. And maybe we work up towards where that becomes normal for me to be in the same room with that individual, and we work up to that point. But whatever it is, I need to treat them with the same respect and kindness that I would treat any person on the street. That needs to be something that we do. Make sure that we're resisting the urge to channel the resentment that others heard. I'm working on getting rid of my resentment, but somebody comes up to me and starts talking about their resentment. And what does that do? Oh, let me tell you about my story, right? Now we're starting to go back and forth, and it starts to go, you know, and it explodes, and all that resentment comes rushing back. What I've been trying to do to get rid of becomes rushing back. Instead of maybe in that situation where a friend wants to talk to you about these things, maybe offer some advice on how to deal with it. I completely understand. I've been where you are. I am where you are. I'm in the process of dealing with it myself. Here's some things that I've done. And so be that voice of change for them. Resist the urge. Because realize that unless we change, this is as good as it's going to get. Unless we make some changes, this is right where we are right now is as good as it's going to get. And sometimes we don't want to be right here, wherever that is. If that we're full of resentment, that's not where we want to stay. So we need to start making some changes. Forgive. You knew it was going to be on the list at some point, right? Forgive. We need to be the ones that start making some change. Be the one that starts that process. Look over at Matthew chapter 18. Matthew chapter 18. Several parables here. There's one that we call the parable of the wicked servant. And you can call it the parable of the wicked servant or the parable of the just king. But what's the Cliff Notes version? What happens in this parable? Do you all remember? We have a servant who owes a debt. Matthew chapter 18, beginning of verse 21. It starts off by Peter's coming and saying to Jesus, Lord, how often shall I forgive my brother sin against me? How often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Up to seven times? And he said to him, I do not say up to you up to seven times, but up to 70 times seven. Right? And you've heard people talk about this. When Peter talks to him, it's maybe offering seven. Peter thought that was a pretty good, that's pretty good to offer seven, right? But Jesus said, nope, I'm going to blow your number out of the water, right? And the idea is to completely always forgive them. And so in this context, when we begin to look at this situation, there's somebody settling their debts, right? A king who wished to settle his accounts with his slaves, and so he has a slave that owed him an amount of money that he could never really ever pay back. He could never pay this back. Interest was high. He sold everything. He still can't pay it back, and he's going to put him in jail. And you definitely can't pay anything back in jail, right? That's just not going to happen. But what does a king do for this slave to settle this debt? What does a king do? He forgives him. Forgives him. And I'm sure he grovels on his face before him and he goes out. He should be going out rejoicing. But what does he do when he goes out from the presence of the king and he sees somebody who owes him like $5, right? In comparison to what he owed. What does he do? Puts him in jail. He kicks the dog. He puts him in jail. You owe me $5. People told on him. King finds out. King calls him back. Verse 32, then summoning him, his Lord said to him, you wicked slave, for I gave you all that debt because you pleaded with me. Should you not also have had mercy on your fellow slave in the same way that I had mercy on you? And his Lord, moved with anger, handed him over to torturers until he should pay what was owed to him. My heavenly Father will also do the same to you if each of you does not forgive his brother from your heart. So this concept of forgiveness, and when we put it in perspective like this, Christ has already forgiven that individual for whatever evil, whatever wrong has been committed against you. Now, I'm not saying that person's innocent. The person still needs to do their part in order of owning up for that and having those, because that's another thing altogether. But that was a sin that Christ died for. Would you be one to forgive that individual? And in the grand scheme of things, all that God has forgiven and all that has been forgiven of us, are we perfect? Have we ever wronged anybody? Would we hold that against them? Yes, ma'am. Oh, yeah, definitely. I wouldn't lend them money after. If they haven't paid me back the first time, and we'll get to that in just a second, but forgiveness doesn't mean that I keep repeating or putting them in a situation where they keep repeating the same thing. You've lent money to this individual. They weren't able to pay it back. Lending them again is not good for them because it's just going to obviously put them in more debt. And so in that case, no, we would not give them opportunity. Forgiveness doesn't mean I won't do a thing for somebody. It just means what's good for them in this case isn't lending them more money. Because apparently that's not the issue. It's how they handle their funds. So that goes for obviously a lot of different, that's a small example, but there goes for a lot of things. We forgive them, but we don't put them in the same situation to maybe commit that sin against us again in that particular instance. But yes, so I need to learn to forgive. And this, like I said, puts things in perspective of what God has forgiven us. We aren't perfect in our dealings. We've wronged, maybe we've hurt, maybe we've done some things, and that puts things in perspective as well. Another way of looking at this with a biblical example, let me look at this first. I'm getting ahead of myself. There's some hard questions that people ask about this, and one of those is, how do I get even? How do I get even? Do we get even? We don't get even. Does getting even, is that a healthy concept to like pursue? I'm going to get even with this, but just like even Stevens, like no, we don't get even. We don't get even. We need to get rid of the baggage that goes with that. We need to get rid of some other things, but we don't get even. And I don't think, actually, if you think about it, we wouldn't want even. Would we want even? Would we want where everything is fair and just and a world of no grace and a world of no mercy? Would we want that? Why would we not want that? Every wrong that I've done, because I'm going to be on the side of this coin. I'm going to be at some point or have been on the other side of this. So we don't want even, really. Emotionally maybe, but really we don't want to live in a world of evens. So how do we get rid of the pain? Do we ever completely get rid of pain? Hurt, emotional pain. Do we ever 100% it goes away? It's like it never happened. Does it ever happen? No, it doesn't go away, but it changes. It gets to a point where I can deal with it. It's not as overwhelming as it once was before. And what we can do with it, and in connection with that as well, with the memories of those things that took place, I can use those memories in order to not lend again, right, or not put myself in that situation, or maybe not do my part where maybe I was playing a part or role in whatever that was. But am I in now a position to help others who are going through whatever it was that hurt? Am I now in a position to be able to help people through the same kind of pain, the same kind of memories, the same kind of situation that I had once been in? How many times have we heard stories of people who have suffered horrible loss and tragedy, but were able to go through that tragedy and other side of it be a source of help and encouragement to others who are going through something similar? That's the way of using that. That's the way of turning it around. That's the way where Christ said to Paul, my grace is sufficient for you, right? I'm turning it around and using that. And one person that did that, if you consider Joseph, did Joseph have any reason for resentment? Was his family perfect? Man, it was a messed up family, right? Did some weird things, that family. But God used them. God used them. Look at how he named his children. You know when this took place? This is before he saw his brothers. This is before all that went down. Look at how he named his kids. Manasseh, God has made me forget all my trouble in my father's house. Ephraim, God has made me fruitful. I've moved on. That doesn't define me anymore. What's interesting is he moved on from that pain, and to think about this, was God waiting for him to move on from the pain before he used him? Because he spent a lot of time in jail. He spent a lot of time in these various stages in his process. If he hadn't moved on from this, could God have used him? We don't have answers to that, just floating it out there for you to think about. But could have God used him? In this position of power, he was going to have to work with Potiphar again, probably. Be in the same room with him. You know what his wife's name was? Potipharah, the female version of Potiphar. So he got over that, right? He got over that. Do you see where we're going with this? He was able to move on and be productive. He used those things and even said so after the death of his father. His father dies at the end of the book of Genesis. And what are the brothers saying? Dad died, right? Maybe Joseph was just being nice out of respect for dad. Dad's gone. And now they're thinking, what? All right, now he's really going to show us. Now he's really going to get back at us because there's nobody here to keep him in check. There's nobody here that would say, no, don't do that. Everybody would understand if he began to, you know, have his vengeance. And so he says to them, do not be afraid, for am I in God's place? What does he mean by that? Am I in God's place? What does he mean by that? Am I the righteous judge? Vengeance isn't mine. That's not mine. Am I the righteous? Yes, sir. Exactly. Did y'all hear that? There's a lot of time between when these events with Joseph and when he was initially sold into slavery. A lot of time went by. Jacob and Esau, same thing. A lot of time went by before they came back and they were like best friends and shared bracelets and stuff. Not really, it didn't happen. But you know what I'm saying? Like they mended their relationship. But time took place. And in the case of Christ on the cross, he could immediately, of course, he was human, but we need to give ourselves time as well. I'm not talking about, like, I'm leaving here and drastic changes are happening tomorrow. I'm not saying that I'm going to, like, overnight this project. I'm staying up all night. I'll be done in the morning, right? No, I'm not saying that's what's going to happen with this. And depending on the severity of the hurt, depending on the situation's happened, will determine maybe some of the time that's involved in this. And there were some time that took place. And there was some growing up for Joseph and seeing the world very differently than what he had seen it, wearing a robe of many colors and being the favorite son, to being at the bottom of the rung and cleaning stalls and cleaning, you know, urinal buckets in the cell, right? So a lot happened to bring him to where he was at this point. And we need to give ourselves room to do that as well, but also keep looking forward, right? Don't rest in that one place and say, well, I'm working on it. Have you seen a construction site? And it says, work in progress, opening soon. And you're like, okay, when? When is this going to happen? We don't need to be one of those, right? We need to be like, this is something that we're working on and keep it going. So very good comment. But in this case, Joseph was able to flip the script. So what did he do? So as for you, you meant it evil against me. You meant it for evil. He recognized that. They weren't just kidding around, right? They meant it for evil. But how was God able to use him? Savior of nations was what he was able to do in helping, you know, the breadbasket of Mesopotamia at that time to have enough in order to, you know, go through this famine. So therefore, don't be afraid. I'll provide for you and your little ones. So he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. He had to reassure them. Are you sure? He had to reassure them. I'm taking care of you and I'm taking care of your descendants. Not just you. I'm not going to just you and like your descendants are on your own. I'm taking care of you and even the next generation. I'm taking care of you. He had to work up to that point. But is it humanly, physically possible to let go of resentment? Yes, it is possible. It's possible. We've all been wronged or something's been done to us at some point, to some level, to some degree. And we need to make sure that we're doing our part and not letting resentment just overcome us and move us into a place that we don't need to be. We don't need to be in. Any thoughts or comments? Further questions? All right. Thank you very much for your time tonight. I appreciate it.